topic for this workshop is, if you want what we have to offer and willing to and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Lou L.
I'm an addict named Lou.
Hey, Lou.
I'm gonna sit for as long as I can sit. I'm not a sit down speaker. In a few minutes, I'm gonna look crazy. And I always say this because by the time I'm done, I'm usually sweating and shaking. And I'm gonna try not to curse, right? Let me start by saying that I'm grateful to be here. If you had told me 7 years ago I'd be speaking at a convention of any type of life-saving program, I wouldn't have believed it, simply because of the reality that I saw through humanness, and very much unaware of what was on the verge and the blessing that you know, that was spiritually awaiting me. Topic is how it's out of the how it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And these are the principles that made our recovery possible, and it is only in my opinion that probably the most important word in there is principles. And I missed that in my skimming through the literature when I first got here. I didn't want to do step work. I really didn't want a solution. I just wanted to stop going to prison, and I wanted to stop waking up dope sick. Anything after that was fair game, so a very clear how it works concept didn't apply early, and because of it, I continue to suffer the results of what I can identify today as some subconscious thinking. And what I mean by that is, I need to get up. And what I mean by that is my subconscious thinking and me being unaware of it and me acting on it. First, before I get into that, let me say the concept of how it works is multi-dimensional, because what works for me being a productive member of society at work isn't going to work for me attempting to impose a healthy display of discipline to a four-year-old. It's not going to, you know, thank God my life consists of more of waking up dope sick and getting one more. So I've learned to be responsible on several levels. But the principles, I had to pull that up because I continuously hear principles. Really, what had me going is that it didn't say these are the steps. I was looking at it through my simple mind, and I wanted to see that these are the steps that key, and it doesn't. It says principles. And as a definition to principles, I wish I had read the literature when I first got here like they told me. It says a fundamental truth or proposition that serves as the foundation for a system of belief or behavior for a certain chain of reasoning. Foundation. I didn't have one. I was going to work. First of all, let me say I accumulated everything that I thought I needed when I was in the dope spot. If I only had a girl. If I only had a kid. If I only had a car. If I only had a job. If I only had all these things, I wouldn't be here doing it. When I first got here, they told me I didn't have a drug problem, and I really couldn't get with it. And it was on time, because one of the hardest things that I ever did is start writing on step work. And I'm talking about prison. I'm talking about all the, you know, all the luxuries that come with active addiction, the homelessness, the devil, you know. And when it was time to write and open it up, I just completed a fourth step, right? And this is where I bring it full circle to the subconscious. I just finished a fourth step, and one of the ugliest things about the fourth that I got, the initial outlook was ugly, but in reality it's beautiful because it made me aware, right? But the abuse and the sex section of step four. I'm 41 years old and I've been going through that whole 41 years in fear. Now the subconscious, this is where I was going with it earlier, right? How it works in my life today on a very healthy level, I'm aware of my self-conscious thinking. I know and understand that the life I live today, I am. A lot of things that would affect me, that I would take disrespectful, that I would react to, that I would respond to, that you're not affecting the 41-year-old. You're affecting the 18-year-old who still chooses to hold on to a belief system that there is no mature way of thinking about it. So when you tell me some shit and my punk-ass feelings get hurt, I immediately don't revert to the program because you haven't affected the addict who's working the program. You've affected the kid in me whose straight line of sight is only one solution. And I need to say, one of the biggest fears in my life today, and just for today, I'm not gonna say picking up isn't an option because I'm not fooled. But I have a better chance of catching a life sentence clean than I do of losing a clean date, if that makes sense.
Yep.
I will resort to violence and some very immature behavior before it seems. It'll seem like a better idea to go upside his head than it'll seem to put a needle in my arm. But the results are the same. Mm-hmm. And I always use this example because it's true for me. When I give in and I'm not aware and I'm not protecting that split second of my life, I allow the 18-year-old to come in, commit an act, and disappear. And the 41-year-old who's supposed to be working a program will be the recipient of whatever that judge wants to give me. And what happens with that, outside of throwing away a God-given gift, is I continue the cycle. And let me tell you what would be so sad about continuing the cycle and not practicing a conscious behavior and a responsible, mature behavior, is that I will continue a cycle on my four-year-old that has repeated itself for generations in my family due to active addiction. And I will probably be the most shameful example of folding that with a program in my life. I'm the only one in my family with a program in my life. But with a program in my life and behaving in yesteryear's actions, I'm gonna get yesteryear's results. Sure. I can't expect to stand up here and expect any freedom. I want today's benefits with yesterday's attitudes. It don't cut it. I have a boy. I have a relationship. I have a 22-year-old boy back home. And there is no relationship. And when the powers that be find that feasible, it'll be. But right now I have a 4-year-old that I am Superman. I'm Superman. And I'm Superman because this shit is so much more about drugs. I parent my boy with NA in the back of my mind, and this is what I mean, when I want to lose my temper, or when I do lose my temper, I'm reminded of what's unacceptable, you know what I mean, through my behavior. I'm in the process right now. Well, I was. I'm in and out with it, right? And I was explaining this to another addict earlier. It was stated to me when I first got here, and it didn't make sense, along with a whole bunch of shit that didn't make sense, about you will have a chance to grieve somebody that's alive while you're in this program, while you're in this process. And since I've been here, I'm coming up on 4 years, right? And I've had the blessing. I'm gonna call it a blessing because it's happened early in my recovery. November, I'm coming up on 4 years. And I'm already capable of maturely grieving two sponsors. How they ended, why they ended, it's irrelevant. They ended and I confided in them. One guided me through suicide, and the other, when I'm coming up, because I'm talking about what's going on with me now, I could tell you about all the shit, all the bullshit that got me here. This is how I stay here. I went through a separation in the beginning of the year, and before it became logical to go to a professional that can guide me with this, like a family court lawyer, when I was threatened with you taking him, and I get to say this out loud to a room because I said it to another man in confidence, whether or not that relationship worked or not. But when that threat was given to me, my thought was, I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna kill him. And then I'm gonna kill me, because that relationship is all I got. So before you take him, that's the result. And then sponsorship is very simple when it's healthy, right? He said, "Well, what about a family court lawyer?" I said, "Oh shit! I ain't gotta kill a motherfucker. I just need to get a lawyer." Woo! And by the grace of God, that's what I did, and it worked out, right? I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous for this. This is not what I came here for. I got off a plane 7 years ago, and getting high was the only thing on the agenda. But I was too scared to go to the local methadone program and try to get what I could off the street, so it became a genius idea to come find what I want in Narcotics Anonymous. I came here to COP 7 years ago, and I'm at a Houston convention speaking at a microphone. If you are new, for whatever reason you're here for, for whatever, parole, lawyer, mother, wife, nobody gives a fuck. You're here. I didn't see this down the pipe for me, man. And it took me a long time to appreciate what I have here. I took a picture of something, bear with me. When I was speaking of the self-conscious, in that chapter it says, we isolated ourselves and lived in prisons that we built with loneliness. December 2nd of this year will make 10 years I've been home from prison. November 4th will make 4 years that I'm actually free. So that's 6 years of feet on concrete, locked up. In the free world, locked up. All the luxuries that we're deprived in prison, and we call that being locked up, I have access to them. I am having sex, I am eating food, I am having conversations, I am humanly, emotionally detached. I'm the shell of a man. Nothing you are saying is registering. Do you have $20? Animal. I didn't understand how it works. I had no compass in my life. The irony that there was more pain for me clean that I could register. Let me not say that boldly. I was able to register pain clean that I couldn't register in active addiction. How this thing works for me is a balance, and a healthy balance, and I don't beat myself up when I fall short on what I expect of myself. If you come to me and you ask me, Lou, are you making meetings? And I tell you no, it is because I'm writing on my steps every day. If you come to me and you tell me, Lou, are you writing on your step work? And I tell you no, chances are I'm in the groove of making meetings. I am on the phone every day with an addict. I don't ever get it twisted that you hear the phrase, I arrived. I would even go more simple where I'm okay. I'm not okay. My fragile ego is a second from being offended. I'm 2 seconds from opening my mouth and getting fired. 5 seconds from fucking putting my hands on you and going to prison. Or 6 seconds from you doing some shit to me and me going to the graveyard. Because I'm not thinking. How it works for me in NA, it's giving me that split second to think, to protect my split second. Oh. Before this shit starts, I got like 101 things. I'm gonna come in. And then the brain, it just happens. I wanna touch on being a father, man. Because if we look at things that we address in the basic text, one of the first words that fly out that we'll learn to practice and learn to get together, or we'll be miserable and clean, and is relationships. He is the most healthiest relationship I have in my life. It's pure. And the lie is dead on so many levels. Like, you know, I'm not a good father because I never had a father. I am the father that I am because I never had a father. It works. What's worked for me through this program is I nurture the little boy in me. Through me being a father to my son, I am internally caring for the child who never had what I'm giving. And we both receive the joy. Like, I do things with my boy and I watch him laugh and I watch him smile and I listen to his fake ass promises. Like, I call him my broke ass best friend because like never got money, always asking for shit, right? But yo, and it's the best relationship in my life. And I think because I had the mind state and I had the, you know, and it was probably denial, and thank God for denial on a lot of levels. Like sometimes I think denial is a good thing. Yeah, and God will remove it when you're ready, when he thinks you're ready. Because
My thing was, I don't miss my father. I don't miss my father. I can't miss my father. I can't miss what I never had, right? In the reality, in the truth, whether it be step work, whether it be just communicating with another man about fatherhood, is I'm 41 years old, and I very much love my father that I don't know. I've known my I'm 41 years old. I know my father 30 days. But something clicked through my relationship with my son that made me get in tune with the little boy in me. And it's okay, because all that, putting my chest out and running over father, and all that is me depriving him. I'm here because I've gone through a lifetime of depriving him. At some point in life, I don't know if it was, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a physical abuse. I don't know if it was a sexual abuse. But at some point, I went into a cave to process and never came out. And that happened a long time ago. And as a result of it, drugs are the obvious symptom, but there's a whole bunch of other shit that that I could tell you, that I could show you. I have a homegirl whose son, just very quickly, I have a homegirl down in Florida whose son OD'd Thursday. And we're going back and forth, and she's giving me this self-remedy thing that, you know, they're gonna give him Suboxone, and they're gonna give him methadone and chicken noodle soup and lay him down in the bed for a couple of days, and he's gonna bounce up and be this perfect motherfucker. And I'm like, yo, he don't have a drug problem, man. And it didn't make sense. And it didn't make sense. And the reality is, it's a symptom, an indication that there's some really fucked up shit going on with you. Like, but we only get to really see it if you don't open your mouth, is when you're on a mission. Smoke some crack, and then I'll be able to tell something's wrong with you. But as long as you're working, and your weight is up, right? And you got some clean clothes on, and you shave, I could come in here and tell you I'm all right, and I'm fucking dying inside.
Right.
I did the fourth step and started questioning some shit about myself because about some shit I was doing. One of the best things that ever happened to me was my yets. And I always say it when I, you know what I mean? When I share. My yets were the best thing because God thought it was very funny to give me all my yets back to back. I did the most disgraceful.
Five minutes.
I did the most disgraceful shit back to back. I couldn't hide behind the gun no more. That was my thing. I'm a robbery boy. I'm a stick up kid. I hid behind that image. Everywhere I went, have gun, will travel. I hid behind that until the courage or false courage to pick up that gun was lifted. The desire to use was second. Picking up that gun was first. And what happened? I started having strange bedfellows in the name of one more. It didn't matter. I didn't give a fuck what you look like. It gender didn't matter.
Yeah.
Women get a bad rap. They're the only ones out there, you know. They get crazy in the name of one more. Let a motherfucker lose his hustle. I'm going to show you what I'm going to do for one more. By any means. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you that that's off limits when I've robbed the woman who gave birth to me. Mm-hmm. When I've robbed my little sister. When I've done this and I've done that. Oh, now that's that's off limits. Nothing's off limits.
Nothing. Good.
This is a worldwide fellowship because nothing is off limits.
Right.
There's enough pain in this worldwide fellowship that nothing is off limits the day I slip up and think I got this shit. His school clothes and Christmas gifts will go. Her jewelry will go. That truck will go. And my spirit goes right with it. And I become part of the walking dead again. So I'm going to hand this over, but before I do, I want to read something out of the How It Works. Newcomer, we love you. It says, as a result of attending a few meetings, we begin to feel like we finally belong somewhere. It is in these meetings that we are introduced to the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. We use them on a daily basis. The steps are our solution. They are our survival kit. They are our defense against addiction, which is a deadly disease. Our steps are the principles that make our recovery possible. If you're new and you don't want to work steps, it is likely, I'm not going to tell you what it is for you, but it is likely going to be a very rough road down the line. This book was written, and then it was taken apart, and then it was, I forgot how exactly it's written in the preface, and then it was put back together. And the one thing, this is a 12-step program. That's how it works. The topic is how it works. That's how it works. This isn't a make a meetings program. This isn't go make the coffee. And that's fine. If that's where you want to start, that's fine. But for me personally, there was no way in the world that I was going to stick around here only making meetings and not put a gun in my mouth. Period. I'm an addict named Lou Houston. I thank you. I love you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mom. Thank you. I would like to, or help me thank Will, or not Will, Lou, for sharing his experience, strength, and hope with us. Our next speaker is Ronald C.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ron. I'm an addict recovering from the disease of addiction. And I got clean in New York, and I'm grateful to be at the Houston convention. And waiting patiently to come here and share my experience, strength, and hope. But I want to thank Lou for sharing his experience, strength, and hope, and guiding us on this so wonderful topic. You know, when I got the topic, I was thinking, and I was sitting here, and I said, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then what are you ready? Are you ready to take certain steps? These are the principles that made our recovery possible. And I was in my mind, right, and I wanted to come up here and be slick, right, and begin to go through each one of the steps and regurgitate a bunch of information, right, and then understood that you probably know how to read, right? And I'm a guy that came in here at 19 years old and haven't found a reason to go back out and use, right? So I'm a guy that came in here and got busy early on with the information. I need to tell you that I got in here, I memorized, I was pretty intellectual. The hardest journey for me was going from my head to my heart. I need to tell you that I got a bunch of information and I got the opportunity to learn who I was in this process. When I got here, I thought I was slick because I would stick you, I would shoot you. I was an insecure punk. That's what I was. Right? And after doing some work in this program, I realized what I really was. Full of fear. Shame. You understand? I was a little boy that didn't know how to grow up. So if I told you in the beginning I got here when I was 19, I learned everything that I know today through Narcotics Anonymous and you wonderful people. I want to go to this part, right? And this is for folks, and I don't knock it, right? Because I was one of those guys, I was a stormtrooper in Narcotics Anonymous. If you said the other fellowship, I was going, no, wrong fellowship, right? All that kind of stuff, right? I need to tell you, and I want to read this to you, because I still have people that are in my life, and I'm a literature guy, right? But what I'm going to share with you today is how this literature and application in my life, how I live these steps a day at a time. Hear what I said, a day at a time. So I want to read this from It Works, How and Why. This book is not meant to be an exhaustive study of the NA steps and traditions, nor is it meant to be the word of any aspect of recovery or NA unity. Rather, it is meant to help you determine your own interpretation of the principles contained in our steps and our traditions. We hope you will find personal growth, understanding, and empathy following pages. We pray you will be moved to a new level of insight into your recovery and the valuable place you occupy as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I read that, don't get twisted and lost, because I see a lot of people come up here and get lost in this information. I was the guy that came up here, check it out, right? And I would tell you about this program, and I would memorize a bunch of information, right? And I would regurgitate the information, right? And I was the same guy talking it, and my feet were way back here, because I wasn't walking it. You hear me? I was the guy that came into the meeting, right? And I recovered from, what they say, the waist down, right? I was the guy that would come up here and share in the meeting that it was all fly, right? And I would walk outside and that I'd be tricking. Uh-huh. Hear me? Because that's where this disease took me in early recovery, right? But I wanted to get into this information so bad, this life-saving message. I need to tell you that I'm going to share a little identification purposes, because I think it's important to understand where I came from and how I got here today. I'm grateful for the people that have traveled with me here today from New York that are in my life. I love you guys so much. Narcotics Anonymous is a wonderful thing. So if I told you I got here when I was 19, I created some stories and some history in recovery. You hear me? Some stories and some history in recovery. It's funny, when one of my buddies asked me to come out to Texas, where the journey began for me, right? I got clean in Brooklyn, in Bushwick, Brooklyn. But the journey began, I was the guy that was watching that television show that came on that commercial at 3 o'clock in the morning that said if you had a drug problem, I was that guy. And I remember getting on my knees and begging my old man, right? Because back then, we didn't have DVDs. We had VCRs. So I was on the 50th VCR and the walkout. My dad was the guy that would sleep in front of the door, and I would walk over him, and he would give me that look like, really? I don't know if you guys identify with that look, that response, that you didn't even know why you were doing what you were doing, but you had to get the next one. That's where my addiction took me. So I was a coward and a punk. I hurt the people that were closest to me. Mm-hmm. Not distant, the people that were closest to me, yeah, that loved me. Those were the people that I hurt. So I need to tell you that after watching that commercial, that I got on my knees and I called that 800 number. And I begged for some help. And I sat there with my dad. And I remember crying. I want to remember this, man, because I was crying. Because I didn't want to use no more. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of living the way I was living and hurting the people that loved me the most. I need to tell you that. And I remember these people came and they picked me up and they took me to this beautiful country club upstate. And I got to the doors, right? And I remember getting to the doors. And I remember meeting this person up front. And she told me, and I got there and I said, listen, I got this thing called a crack problem. Hear what I said? I got a crack problem. I'm gonna smoke weed, I'm gonna drink, I'm gonna mescaline, acid, I'm going to hang out with my boys, I'm still going to hustle, I'm going to do all of those things. I just need to stop smoking crack. Because when I do that, I go to places that I don't know how to come back from. So she told me that there was these people that were going to come called H&I. And they were going to bring this life-saving message. And I didn't understand what they were talking about. And she told me to sit up front and to listen. And I listened. And I got up there and I listened and I sat up front. And the readings are so important in this program, right? Right? It works how and why. Who's an addict, right? All of those readings are so important. And about this topic today, and I'm going to get into the topic of how I live, because I told you I'm not just going to regurgitate some information. I'm going to tell you how I fall short and how I live it a day at a time. So I need to tell you that I stood at her door in the morning and I went back there and I said, guess what? You got to be crazy. Those people do not know what the hell they're talking about. They just don't understand how to do it. And I remember she said to me, they come in tonight again. I suggest that you sit up front. And I remember sitting up front and I listened and I went through the process of what they had in this thing called treatment. They talk about jails, institutions, and death. And those are the places where we end up, right? So I remember walking out of this institution. And I remember, you know, everybody writing in my book, you know, you have so much potential. I don't know how many people heard that before. You have so much potential.
Yeah.
You're such a smart guy. You have the world by, you know, all those things they wrote about it, right? And she came up to me and she said, when you relapse, just understand there's a life-saving fellowship to come back to, Aaron. That's what she said. And all I can remember driving home was like that bit. The whole way home. You hear what I'm saying? I was pissed. I didn't hear anything else. How dare her say some nonsense like that to me? I need to tell you that I think I stayed abstinent for 5 months in spite of what the hell she said. So I went to my boys. I hung about the bar. I was still hustling. I was still doing everything that they told me that I couldn't do. They talked about people, places, and things, right? I didn't realize until I did some work that I was the person that goes to the places and does the things, right? It was no shit doing push-ups outside. The disease lied right here. You understand? It wasn't outside. This insidious disease was right in here. Hear what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
So I remember asking the bartender for a shot. I took a shot and I was smoking crack 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Hear what I said to you? 5 minutes later, there was no pause. I then got on a plane because guess what? It was the people in my town that had a problem. I had to get out of Dodge. And I ended up in Texas. How about that? Dallas, Texas. The town I went to was Colleyville, Grapevine, Texas. It was a dry town. I said, shit. My boy met me at the airport with a 40 and a blunt. And so I continued to use, right? Not my jug of choice, until I got a car, right? Until I got a car, and I don't know about folks, but I have a instant radar for GPS wasn't out then. But I tell you what, when I got wheels, that green building and shit, and I knew where I was going downtown, I figured out how to use. And I continued that process and that vicious cycle. And I share this experience because I was in Dallas, and I remember I was in a hotel room and I was using. And I was, like I told you, I was a coward. I was a punk, right? I was the guy that would take off my shoes, that would give you the keys to my car and sit there and wait. You hear what I'm saying? Wait. Like, aren't you coming back just for a piece? And I remember running up credit, right? And I ran up credit, ran like $2,000 up. And I remember coming back, three kids with pistols were gonna come to this house of mine that I was gonna drive them to and give them some money that I know damn well I didn't have. And I'm saying, how in the world am I getting out of this one? And I remember driving and driving, and we're ingenious folks, right? So I remember driving up the police steps of the precinct, driving my car straight up the police steps. Dudes jumped out, cops come running out, guns loaded. They were like, what? And I had that same look, like I stepped over my dad, like I didn't even know what the hell was going on. I didn't even have an answer for the response. That stupid look. And then, and only then, I needed to do something different. And I had a beautiful mother, right, that was praying for me to get into this process. And there was a gentleman that got on the phone that couldn't even speak English. He spoke predominantly Spanish. And I didn't know at that time he was 12-stepping me. He was talking about what this step work, that this topic is about. He was telling me that there was a better way to live. And that if I got into this plane, that I can come to this place, and that they will love me until I learn how to love myself. And I didn't quite understand what he was talking about. And through faith, right, before I even worked the step, I got on the plane, and I don't know if it was faith or I had nowhere else to go. I got on the plane, and I ended up on Bushwick and DeKalb Avenue. And I don't know if anybody knows what Bushwick and DeKalb Avenue looked like in 1992. Radioactive, abandoned buildings, prostitution, drugs. I said, there's no way that I'm getting clean here. It's impossible, right? Disease, entitlement, right? I left the bags in the car. I said, I'm gonna go up to the steps of this institution and I'm gonna check, because if they have roaches, I ain't staying. Check that out, insidious, right? How this disease is. And they were looking at me like, is this crazy? And I remember getting into this place, man. And when I got there, like, you know, I stayed there for a little bit. And obviously, I wanted to pick the guy, because they gave you some privileges in this place. And I wanted to pick the guy that was mandated in the facility to take me on my first escort, because I knew that they had $2 vials in Harlem. And I remember going out and using. And I remember coming back and having a function at the place, and was on the phone, and this person was geeking, and they came with two black bags and they kicked me out. I said, you can't stay here anymore. I grew up upstate New York, I just came from Texas, I'm in the middle of Brooklyn, I didn't even know how to ride the subway. It was talk about growing up, right? I went to my mother's apartment, she was gone. She told me that she was dead. And until I figured out how to do this, you don't have a mother no more. And so I had to grow up. And so I repeatedly wanted to go back to this institution, and they kept telling me that I couldn't come back. So I was homeless at 19 years old, riding the train back and forth, trying to figure out how I was gonna do something different. So I got the opportunity. They said, yeah, you can come back. It was like five days they left me out there. And I remember coming back. And at that particular point, when we talk about surrender, right? When they talk about willingness, when we really talk about these principles, right? If they told me that I had to stand butt naked on DeKalb and Bushwick, I would have been butt naked, because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of living the way I was living. And only then did I decide to do something different. And in that institution, once again, H and I came. I was like, these people keep following me place to place. Just couldn't figure it out. And I got the opportunity to meet some unbelievable men. that became my sponsor, that became my support group, that became my foundation. I used to have a home group called Keep It Green in Brooklyn, New York.
Right.
And home group, do you understand what a home group is? Like I'm talking about a home group, like somewhere that I walked into and I made my, like, home, because I didn't have a home. You guys told me in this program that I can be whatever I want to be if I got busy and I did the work. And I continued in this process, and I laid the foundation. And I utilized this information in a strategic way to help me a day at a time, to learn how to live in a program that was designed with the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. They didn't promise me that I was going to get a bunch of initials. They didn't promise me that I was going to be the guy to go back to that facility and be the executive director of the same facility that I was checking in on. They didn't tell me that I was going to get a family. They didn't tell me that I was going to raise a child, that I was going to get married. Hear what I'm saying? Hear what I'm saying? That's how this process worked. So I began to do the work through sponsorship, and I began to do the work and grow up and become a man. And when I started to do the work, some amazing things happened. So I always refer to this, right? Because I told you, being here a little while, you create a bunch of different stories in here, right? So 10 years, I think, my home group, I ended up, you know, arriving, right? Narcotics Anonymous did its due. They gave me everything that I wanted. I'm great. I got property, prestige. I got all the cars, the boats, the wife, everything, right? So check it out. I go to one meeting. Insidious, right? This is how this disease works. Insidious. Lying in wait, right, Peter? I got there. I got the picket fence. I got the beautiful house. I went to one meeting out there, and somebody said they had 30 or 40 years clean, but they had like 5 days, and they were up in the front sharing, and all I heard was like, 5 days? These people don't know what the hell they're out doing in Long Island. And I distanced myself, right? And I said, you know what? I ain't going back, right? They say this. Where is it in the information? They say, an attitude of indifference and intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three that are indispensable. Real important stuff, right? Like, Peter talked about the Webster Dictionary, and I'm not really like, I went on Google today, right? And I started looking up some definitions, right? Because I wanted to hang out. So, indispensable, essential, crucial, required, all important, imperative, mandatory. That's some strong ass language. And so the disease distanced myself once again. When I came in, I thought I was too young. When I'm here for 10 years, I got everything that I needed from this beautiful fellowship, and I arrived. So I stopped making meetings. You hear what I'm telling you? And I share this for the person that has been here for some time and maybe doesn't want to raise their hand and share about that. And I stopped making meetings, and thank God that I had a foundation in this program. And I didn't use, but the indifference, the tolerance, the 0 to 100 in 5 seconds, the family that hurt from all of that information, because I couldn't, I wasn't living a program, I wasn't in recovery. This is something that you have to remain vigilant in. You can't just dance around it. You got to be in it. It's a day at a time program that you got to commit to. So you have to do some work. And guess what? I hate to burst your bubble. If you're here new, if you stay here for a while, you're going to go through some storms in this process. So how much time I got?
13 minutes.
So I share this. Life got real well. I had the ability to, do some wonderful things. They told me in the beginning, beyond my wildest dreams. And I've truly, truly, truly have had the opportunity to do things that beyond my wildest dreams I ever thought in Narcotics Anonymous. I retired at 42. Never have to work again. You hear what I just said? Working harder than I possibly ever worked in my entire life right now. Because I walked away from a place that kept me empty to do something that gave me purpose. Helping other people. Hear what I'm telling you? Right? This program. Getting back into a place. I'm telling you, 25 years, the 25th year in my recovery was probably the hardest time that I've ever had in recovery. I lost my mother on September 3rd. And I said, I don't know what I would do if I lost my mother in this process. And I lost her. And everything that you guys taught me and how to get through it and get to the other side and be there and be supportive, you showed me. No coincidence, I was at PC Richards with a buddy of mine. They told me that my mom passed. And it was okay. It was a relief because she wasn't suffering anymore. And guess what? For the last 25 years, I was able to be present in her life and be a son. Wasn't robbing, stealing, all that power of attorney, all those things that I had to be supportive to my mom. Now, this is where it gets interesting. When you stop doing step work, right? Character defects remain, just to let you know. So I need to tell you that I had the picket fence, wife number two, hear what I'm saying? And because I was not doing the work, because I took a hiatus from doing the work, I was the guy that went and got cigarettes for 4 hours. Hear what I'm saying? And rationalized and justified the behavior like it was okay. But you guys told me, and I believed you, that there's these principles, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, that if I come in here and I raise my hand and I continue to do the work, that I can get to the other side of that defect. So hear me, I lost my mother. I woke up one morning and my wife, that's not in recovery, said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. And she took these two beautiful women, my girls, and she got on a plane and she broke out. Right? So God was setting the stage and I didn't even know it. So what happened? I went to a meeting. I shared about it. I was nervous. I was never the guy that could, listen, always somebody had to wake up in the bed next to me. It's been 13 months and ain't nobody woke up on the other side of my bed. Do you understand the freedom of getting to be introduced to yourself with a bunch of commitments, with a bunch of information, with a bunch of titles? Do you know what it means to wake up by yourself and have a relationship with not only yourself, but the God of your understanding? And I've been introduced to a God that had told me that it was going to be all right, no matter what, Ron. That I didn't have to go out, and I didn't have to just substitute, and I didn't have to make the same decisions over and over again. And so I surround myself, and I got sponsees, and I do the work, and I show up, and sponsorship is an important and valuable role in this fellowship. I always say it, the sponsees don't even have a clue on how much help they give me on a daily basis. They really do not have a clue. When it's Monday and we got to do step work and I'm like, what the hell? I don't want to do this shit again. That's when I show up. And guess what? When we're doing a four step and we're going back and forth and I don't want to share, I have to remember when we're making the connections, when we're looking at behavior and patterns. I have to get honest And sometimes I got to redirect because there's areas that I haven't done well in. And so this program of recovery taught me that I could begin to do that work. And I can redirect and have other people and say, maybe you should speak to so-and-so. This program has taught me that. Humility. You know, I'm grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. If you want to know how I'm living a program, check it out. I got a 20-year-old son ready to graduate from college. He texts me. He doesn't suffer from this disease, thank God. Right? He says, I love you, Dad, every day. You hear what I'm saying? He gets on the, he's going to go, he's in a fraternity, he's going to drink. He says, Dad, I'm parking the car and I'm going to take an Uber. And I remind him, subtly, that you have this gene that can earn you a seat up front. And he goes, I got you, Dad, I got you, Dad. But you hear the relationship, right? So God knows what he's doing. I learned how to be a father in here. Do you know what it is? I'm talking about, man, the freedom of being a parent. Unbelievable. You understand what I'm saying? To being a father. And he teaches me so much on a daily basis. Because I always think, I don't care about 26 years in this process. I'm a baby. Think about it. I stopped growing. My son, I'll tell you this before we almost... I'll tell you this story. I had 20 years clean, and my son went to private school, and he came home, and these guys took his phone off the bus. And I live in Long Island. Long Island to Brooklyn's like 45 minutes, right? And they took his phone, and his mother called me, and he said, yo, they robbed your son, they robbed your son. And I think I made it to Brooklyn in like 15 minutes. Hear me? 20 years clean. Suit, tie, right? Check it out. With a 9mm in my pocket, in the back of my jacket, had a bunch of kids, families, uncles, lined up on the wall, right? Talking about take off your sneakers, take off your shit until he gets his phone. I went there. You understand? I went there with 20 years clean. My son is looking at me like, who the hell just showed the fuck? Who showed up here? Like, what just happened? And I said to him, don't you know, like, how are you gonna let somebody just roll up on you and just, and he said, Dad, we have insurance. I said, what'd you just say? He said, I ain't getting hurt over no telephone. So you want to know how the steps work in my life? That's how they work. Hear what I'm saying? He said, Dad, I'm not fighting over a phone. Unbelievable what this program has afforded me the ability to learn. And I continue to be open-minded and willing, right? Because it's tough when you get time here to listen to other people. Right? I got a sponsor that learned how to read in this program. So it's tough sometimes for this addict to listen. And so I continue to listen and continue on this journey so that I can embrace and have the freedom that this program truly has to offer. My name is Ron. Thanks for letting me share.
Help me thank our speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Thank you for allowing me to serve as your chair for this workshop. Will you please join me in the circle and close this meeting out with a third step prayer? Let this circle represent what we can't do alone, we can do together.
Recover.
Many addicts said,
Take my will and my life. Guide me in my recovery. Show me how to live.
Queen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it. You die if you don't, so work it.
So different, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be for y'all.
The game show is going to be for me.
Excuse me.
Let's go.
You got to come in the